As a traveler, it's a fact you're going to need to manage your spending in different currencies. You need a service that not only helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, but also does it without the hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This is where Wise comes in. Wise is the easiest way to connect all of your finances internationally. I've been a customer for over a decade. It's been a lifesaver for me as a traveler, a nomad, and now a permanent resident abroad. If you're a traveler who's still using your regular bank, you need to check this out. Join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account could work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/travel. That's wise.com/travel. Thank you to Wise for supporting today's show. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
If you're in a career and you're thinking about what's next, your frame of reference is only what's in front of you. It's only what your colleagues are doing. It's like, oh, they go work for a bank or they go work for another consulting firm. Like, that's what you're comparing it to. Whereas if you actually go and disappear for a few months, you really get this, like, crazy different set of perspectives.
That was a little clip from my interview today with Will Ricard, who wrote a book about his travels through some of the stands along the Silk Road in a pursuit to find happiness, find out what happiness really means. And what is happiness, really? We dig into that topic, and it's a big one here on today's show. We also talk about how this particular set of destinations plays in to what he discovered about himself and happiness while he was traveling along the Silk Road after quitting a corporate job and doing the anti-bucket list thing. I'll explain what that is before we get into the interview. You might want to take the anti-bucket list approach after hearing that. And of course, a lot of topics swirling around the theme of happiness. And there's a lot of nuance to this topic, right? We talk about gratitude a lot on the show. It's something that I think is so important in life to have that gratitude. But sometimes you just aren't happy with a certain situation and gratitude's not going to cut the mustard, or it'll make you better for a little bit, but you feel like you need to do something about that. On the other hand, we can fall into this trap of pursuing more, right? Always pursuing more and never really being content. So what does all this mean? And how does it relate to travel and what we're talking about today and these destinations in particular? And we dig into all of that in the interview. We also talk about the importance of having a purpose, how to stay calm in dangerous situations when you're traveling, why being enthusiastic for something is important and different than being passionate about something that you pursue, and so much more. It's all happening in today's interview. Plus, I'm going to give a shout out to somebody in the community, some extra props, because they took me on a little seaside adventure. That felt good. I'll share what that's all about. And who knows what other surprises we'll get into, but we got to get into it now. So let's buckle up. Why don't you strap in, grab your favorite beverage, relax, enjoy a little you time. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey there, it's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little bit of travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. You heard at the top of the show, we're covering a lot of ground today, and happiness, I think, is an important topic, especially now. I mean, a lot of us have been inside, hasn't been a normal year, to say the least, and maybe some of us have found ourselves in dark places for periods of time. Certainly, I have had bouts of, I wouldn't say extreme depression or anything like that. I wasn't laying in bed and couldn't get up, but definitely this winter was rough. You know, couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything. It's still pretty locked down here in Norway where I live, but, you know, it's much better when the sun's out, I guess, and the birds are starting to chirp, and you feel like you're seeing a little light at the end of the tunnel, and it's a tough thing, right? It's a daily thing that we have to kind of do to keep a positive mindset and do what we need to do to take care of ourselves to maintain a level of maybe somewhat called happiness, contentedness. I don't know what word you want to use. I feel like content maybe is a better word because there's an expectation sometimes around happiness, and that can happen a lot, I think, with travel as well, right? We book a trip and we have this expectation that X, Y, or Z trip or destination or person we're going to meet or whatever is going to make us happy, right? And chances are probably it will on many levels, but if the expectation is too strong, I feel like that can be a problem too, because you're setting yourself up to think you're going to have some certain emotion instead of just us taking in the present moment for what it is. And whatever, we don't have to talk about it all right now. We're going to dig into this topic on the show, but I just think happiness is such an interesting topic, especially as it relates to travel and being that people sometimes choose travel because they are unhappy or discontent and they feel the road calling, and the road might equal happiness in some ways. So you're going to hear about Will's experience and what he learned around happiness for himself, and in particular, as I mentioned, how it relates to these specific destinations, because you can't separate that out, right? There's a certain culture and a certain vibe, and there are people you meet along the way in a particular place that your physical body is, and you can't extract that from the situation and just say, well, this is just about happiness and travel. Well, no, this very much relates to the destinations we're covering today, which is Kyrgyzstan, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, and Kazakhstan, part of the old Silk Road. And what a fascinating part of the world. I would love to travel in this part. I have not been there. And I just looked up on Wikipedia a little bit about the Silk Road, which I've read about before, but I just wanted to share a bit with you before we get into this interview, because it's an important part of this. And the Silk Road, if you're not familiar with it, it was and is, I'm quoting Wikipedia now here, a network of trade routes connecting the East and West, and was central to the economic, cultural, political, and religious interactions between these regions from the 2nd century BC to the 18th century. That is a long amount of time. And you think about the convergence of all these cultures and how this being a trade route, you know, before the internet, and how customs and language and all these types of things that travel that aren't physical, you know, people or humans, but these things are traveling too, these entities, right? Language and culture and food and all of this stuff. And it really still, of course, impacts the world that we live in today. If anybody has recommendations for this area, or they want to share more about it, or anything else at all you think you can provide some value to the community, please get in touch. You can always drop me a line or just say hi, jason@zerototravel.com. I also have a link in the show notes where you can leave a voice message really easily. I love to get audio messages because I can share them on the podcast and I can hear your voice, which is a wonderful thing. You get to hear my voice all the time. It's not fair. I want to hear your voice too. No, I'm kidding. It would be nice though. So feel free to get in touch. Reach out anytime. Okay, now let's slip and slide into today's interview segment, and I will see you on the other side, my friend. I'm on with Will Ricard, who just published a new book called The Silk Road to Happiness, Untold Stories from Kyrgyzstan, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, and Kazakhstan, the stands. I'm really excited to have you on. You got a wild story that kind of led up to this trip, and sort of the crux of this book is it's really based on your experience traveling the stands and the Silk Road and answering that age-old question, what makes people happy? What makes you happy? What does happiness mean? So anyway, Will, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Thanks, man. Super happy to be here. It's a good topic, the happiness.
You got up at like 5 a.m. for this because you're all the way in Canada and I'm in Norway. So I got to give you a shout out for that. Have you had your coffee yet?
No, I haven't, but I just made tea. I'm thinking like, am I going to go back to bed after this? So I don't know. Like, I didn't want to have coffee in case I'm like lying here awake. So
Oh, man, okay.
I'll do that if I, if I stay awake, I'll have coffee after this. So all good though, Matt. I didn't actually tell you I was in Canada.
Okay, that's okay. My goal is to get you so hyped that you're not going to want to go to bed. You're going to be like, oh man, I'm way too amped up.
Yeah, well, hopefully your audience feels so hyped as well after listening to this, man. So,
well, I'm excited. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, anytime you get into this question of happiness, it's like, you know, what does happiness mean? You know, is there really a universal definition for happiness? Is it totally subjective, of course? I mean, there's so much around it. I was actually looking up the definitions between content and happy because I was like, well, what is the difference there? And the definition I looked up, content is in a state of peaceful happiness. This is according to the dictionary. And happiness is the state of being happy. So
whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, we're going to get into all that. And I want to hear how your experience on the road kind of maybe answered, didn't answer that question, but we gotta go, as we normally do, back to where it all started for you, because you have a kind of an interesting story on how you ended up in the specific destinations. But also what I'm really interested in is what made you choose this project and this exploring this idea of happiness. But talk about life in Australia. What did you do coming? Did you go to university? What did you do coming out? What was kind of your path?
Yeah, so rewind a few years now, and I was working for the world's largest consulting firm, right? So it's one of these big global firms that, you know, has offices all around the world and hundreds of thousands of professionals. And I was living in my beachfront apartment in Manly Beach in Sydney, you know, east facing, wake up each morning at the sunrise and, you know, go for a swim at the beach and whatever else. And you know, then I'd take the ferry over to the city, across Sydney Harbour and overlooking you see the Opera House and the Harbour Bridge, go to my high rise building to work and, you know, solve some interesting problems and whatever else. You know, I was also finishing my master's degree at the time in accounting, and doing my professional accounting certificate, you know, which is pretty well regarded, like if you want to go down that path, right? So, you know, everyone around me was pleased to see me doing so well, right? Because, you know, from the outside, it looks like it's a pretty good path, right? You know, these firms are pretty hard to get into, you know, in my business school, like, and I'm, you know, this was like the top firm that people want to get into, right? And so
I guess you could say it's a pretty prestigious company.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and there's a reason, right? These firms are slick. You know, there's a lot of opportunity. My superiors were very impressive. You know, they're just incredibly intelligent, and the people around you are very inspiring, right? So, you know, it's hard not to be inspired working in a place like this. Anyway, I was approaching that 2-year mark, and, you know, age 28, sort of just thinking like, what's next? Like, am I sticking around in this, or what am I doing with my life, right? Do I want to keep going? Because I don't know. I'm sort of getting a bit antsy, itchy feet, that sort of thing. So I'd had this idea for a book, which I'd been discussing with my friend, you know, weeks earlier, or I'd had it in my head for months earlier about, you know, traveling to, you know, far off destinations, and discussing a particular theme, taking photos of people and then writing a book about their lives, right?
Why a book? Why did that capture your attention? I mean, because you could just do a gap year. You could take off and travel. You don't necessarily have to do a project around it.
I mean, because I read a lot, right? I spend my time reading. And those who read probably get lots of ideas, right? I mean, anyone who writes books, they probably read a lot of books. So I don't know. I had so many ideas in my head. And so I was thinking, like, you know, why not try and figure this out? I mean, I'd never written a book before, and I wasn't I'd been a failed photographer earlier on in my life, but that's a whole separate story. and I'd never written a book or anything like that, but I was like, I want to try this out, you know? So I'm thinking, like, I could ask my work for a few weeks off, but I don't know, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, not enough. I want to go for longer than that. And, you know, the more I thought about it, the more distracted I got, right? So, you know, that's not great, particularly if you're on a good path, but you're sort of thinking, is this right for me? And so,
This nagging thing that just kind of kept hanging around.
Exactly. You know? And so I write this, like, in, you know, in the book, like, as days went by, I mean, my thoughts, they drifted away from my spreadsheets and onto the, you know, greener pastures of somewhere in Latin America or Africa or Asia or somewhere, right? You know, and so I left work one day, and I was reading the book, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying by Bronnie Ware, if you haven't read it.
Yeah, well, she had her on the show.
Ah, I missed that one. Right.
Yeah, if people can search the archives if they want to listen to that interview. But yeah, awesome woman. Amazing book.
It's an amazing book. And, you know, one of the things she finds is that, you know, I think the number one regret is that people, they lived a life that was according to other people's goals and values and didn't chase what they really wanted. Right. So I sort of started to feel this, like, you know, crisis overwhelming me, like, okay, like, is this going to be me? I mean, I'm only 28. There was, I read an article and I saw it recently, and it was called like the 28-year-old existential crisis. You know, you're at that age, like, is it too late to change my career? Am I too old to be going traveling? Or like, what do I do? Right. So I called up my dad and I'm like, Dad, like, I'm sort of having a bit of a crisis. I'm thinking about like quitting and just going and just traveling somewhere. And he's like, he's like, Will, you'll be making $1 million in 15 years. And I'm like, yeah, 15 years. Like, what do I do until then? Right. Like, that's like, it's just like classic baby boomer thing to say, you know. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do until then. Right. And so, you know, he like drives to my house, picks me up and takes me over to his wife's house. And she's like, you know, she goes, do you know how many people would give their left arm for your job? And I'm like, yes, like, I get it, but you're not giving me the answer that I want. Right. You know, so as days went by, the commitment to my job, it dwindled. And I thought back to, you know, the book Into the Wild, if you haven't read it. And I know one of your hosts talked about it in a recent episode. But, you know, what he says in the book is you know, I think careers are a 20th century invention and I don't want one, right? And that just resonated, right? I just sort of started questioning the whole system, the whole of society. You know, what's the point of all this? Is this just made up? And I don't need this. I don't want this. It's just a way to keep people controlled, you know? So it was pretty depressing sort of thoughts, right? So, you know, I'm having this sort of crisis. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I was walking down the beach and I opened up Instagram and I saw a guy that I'd met and he posted a picture of him and it said on the Silk Road. He was in Western China. And I was like, Silk Road, I don't really know what that is. And I sort of looked at the map and it was next to Kazakhstan. I was like, I literally know nothing about Kazakhstan. And I was like, all right, this is my sign. I'm doing it. So I ran home before I could change my mind, booked a flight to Kazakhstan. And the next day, I would drop out of my master's degree, drop out of my accounting studies and quit my job. So I would just go. I had a flight for 6 weeks, I think, from the date, or even less, 4 weeks from the date of you know, the day I booked it. I would just go with no contacts, no plan, knowledge of foreign languages. Hadn't really looked at them. I mean, I looked at a map a little bit, no Lonely Planet, nothing. I was like, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to go and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I mean, it's definitely one way to do it, right? If you're in that situation, you're having the existential crisis, I'm talking to you, the listener, it's like, well, that's certainly one way, right? You just book the flight. You're like, well, I guess I have to quit my job now or I lose all this money on the flight. Talk about built-in accountability, right?
Exactly.
Well, so you got skin in the game, booked it. Right?
Exactly, man. Exactly. And that was it. Like, because I remember saying that, I was like, well, any talk of my manager to try and talk me out of it, it's like, sorry, man, I booked the flight. Like, you know, this was like,
well, how did they react when you came in and said that?
Well, it was kind of funny because one of my colleagues, he'd said, look, I'm quitting. This is weeks earlier. He's like, I'm quitting. And they're like, where are you going? They're like, oh, I'm going to the competitor firm. And they marched him out, right? Because in any of these big companies, if you go to a competitor, they'll just march you out on the spot. They'll say, all right, leave your laptop here. Like, we're marching you out, right? Like, see you later. Thanks. But, you know, you can't, like, we don't like this sort of thing. And I said that to my manager. I'm like, are they going to march me out like they did to Nick? And he goes, no, mate. Like, he went to a competitor. You're going to Kazakhstan. Like, he's like, you know, you're welcome to stay for the next few weeks. And you know, it's fine. Like, you know, it was an excellent experience and it's got me to where I am now, which is awesome. And, you know, the guy who hired me actually said, he's like, hey, you're probably a bit too entrepreneurial for this place anyway. So, you know, it's been great and I wish you well. And I said, likewise. But yeah, onto the next phase and whatever that will be.
In Australia, there is a pretty good culture around gap year and traveling and that sort of thing. I think from what I know, I mean, a lot of Australians out there traveling. Is that something that you participated in or did you come out and just kind of skip that whole thing and go right into the working world?
No, I definitely did. I took two, in fact. So when I was a bit younger, you know, I spent 6 months living in France, and this wasn't like an exchange program, but I lived there and studied. And then I also took a couple of years early and traveled for several months around Europe. And I lived in a hostel in Albania for a month and went to India and Iran and about a bit of Africa as well. So I had done that some years earlier. So this wasn't like my first real travel experience, but it was, I don't know, the gap year thing. I didn't really need another year. You know, I think if I was sort of like my career had started, you know, at age 26 and I was now age 28 and I was like, you know what, I'm in my career now. I've already done this whole gap year thing a couple of times. I don't need a whole year. I just want to go for a couple of months. So yeah, but it's true. It is definitely true. Australians love to travel and the gap year thing is very common. Yeah. So there's no real shame around it, but yeah.
No, not at all. But I think it's a wonderful thing to have in your culture. Like we didn't really have that in our culture, at least growing up when I did in the States. And so that's why when I started meeting people from the UK and Australia, for example, who had that concept in their culture as like an acceptable thing to do, I was like, well, this makes a lot of sense. Like you learn a lot from traveling. But I don't think you can discount those experiences as it relates to this existential crisis, right? I mean, you had been out in the world and you knew there was a big wide world out there to be explored.
Exactly.
You'd experienced it firsthand. So what were you doing leading up to the corporate job?
I was studying and I was working like kind of just jobs. Like, you know, I was studying and just sort of putting myself through university. I'd been doing bar jobs. I'd been working in a job in a call center, just like selling wine to people and just all sorts of jobs, like just sort of just to get me through university. I was kind of late to the career thing. You know, I started, like I was 26 when I got my first job and my manager was actually older than me. And like, that's cool. Like whatever. I'd spent a few years, like my early 20s, just traveling and kind of messing around and, you know, doing my first degree. And then I was like, yeah, I might just may as well do a second one. I don't really know what I'm doing with my life. So, and then it, you know, it was the right decision though, right? Cause then it got me into this firm. So I was late to the career game, but hey, you know, it got me to this amazing firm, which was like, oh, this is good. So I think at that time, I was like, you know what? Like, I think my career has started now and I don't think I need a whole year off. Like, and I know my mom would kill me if I'd done that because she's like, well, you got to grow up at some point, sort of thing, right? So yeah, but
I'm sure we all have that. You got to grow up.
Thing. Yeah, well, right. And it was kind of like, look, I've got a career now, and so I'm going to go for 3 months. I've already done this a few times, right, in my life. So just go for 3 months. I need to think about what I want to do next. I want to write this book. Maybe I'll just be a full time author and make it big with that, or maybe I'll come back and live by the beach. And, you know, I was thinking also, oh, maybe I can work for the local like fruit store, being their accountant or something. Just like, I just want to live a really easy life, you know? And, but, you know, and I'll get to where I'm at now. We'll talk about that later because it's completely different and completely better. But yeah, I just wanted a few months just to really go and discuss this topic and then think about what's next. Cause here's another thing, right? Like, you think about if you're in a career and I know that anyone who's quit their job and gone traveling experiences this. If you're in a career and you're thinking about what's next, your frame of reference is only what's in front of you. It's only what your colleagues are doing. It's like, oh, they go work for a bank or they go work for another consulting firm. Like that's what you're comparing it to. Whereas if you actually go and disappear for a few months, you really get this like crazy, you know, different set of perspectives, right? You speak to all sorts of other travelers, all sorts of things, and you just think, you can think clearly. And so you can actually, you know, trust your intuition as to what's next, as opposed to just being, you know, around other corporate people and just going and doing other corporate things. So that's, you know, I mean, that's a huge thing, I think, it for a lot of people. And is that, you know, if you don't like your path, you know, hey, what's next? Like go traveling for a few months. Like, you know, and I know like in the US, for example, it's not like really well done for people to do that. Oh, they worry they're not going to get a job when they come back. Like, I just, no, wrong. Just like go and do that and think about what it is that you want. And that can be like, you know, a life-changing thing. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it can be. I mean, you did it pretty abruptly, it sounds like. I don't know how long the sort of as what you would describe as the existential crisis lasted. I feel like I have at least like four of those a year, by the way. So this is it's not like those go away.
True.
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's easy to kind of question things sometimes, and you know, there's a lot around that. But and that's kind of what I want to talk about here, because I feel like there is a balance when you're at that decision point. Just thinking back to times in my life when I've been at that decision point, trying to figure out, okay, am I going to like move on from this thing or whatever. At least for me, it was the sort of like trying to balance this idea of like recognizing the discontent that exists. You know, it's like nothing's perfect, right? So there's always going to like there at some points there's going to be levels of discontent that pop in. I mean, it's just the ups and downs of life, I would say. And then when you have this feeling of gratitude around the things you have, right? So like you were saying, like, well, I have this apartment near the beach, and like there's a lot to be grateful for in those situations. And as your family members were pointing out, a lot of people would like to have a job like this and all this stuff, but you're still not happy. And then I feel like what can happen with some people is that you can end up in that sort of swimming between those two pools, I guess, for a long time. Or you just got to make a decision and hop in one or the other. But, you know, that battle's like a never ending sort of thing. How do you reconcile like sort of the point of appreciation and gratitude with sort of like discontent and like being honest with yourself with that?
I mean, it's not easy, man. Like, and that's a very good, that's the main question that people ask, like, to what extent should I just be happy with what I'm doing versus to what extent should I be ambitious and to go and do something else? And, you know, it's like this back and forth in our minds that we get. And my answer is, well, based on a conversation, it was the final conversation I had in this trip, and I was hoping to go through this chronologically, and we will, but the final conversation I had on this trip, I was back in Kyrgyzstan, which is in Bishkek, the capital, and I was actually waiting for the taxi to take me to the airport, and I met this woman who, she ran the hostel in Bishkek, and I'm like, yeah, talking about happiness and whatever, and she goes, the most important thing to your happiness is to choose a career that you like. Right. The reason is that we spend so much time at work, so you may as well enjoy it. And, you know, I was like, I don't really know what I want to do. She's like, well, you're gonna have to try a few things out, right, and see what sticks. She goes, because if you don't like what you do, then someone else will come along who really does like it, and they'll do it better than you, right? And then you'll be at the bottom of the chain, and you don't want to be at the bottom of the chain, right? And so I think that is like, you know, hey, if you're able to choose a career, then choose something different, right? You're able to try it out. So I think that particularly when you're young, and not even when you're young, you should try new things. And the whole being at the bottom of the chain thing, like, think of this, right? Like, our parents' generation, like, they may have stayed in a job for like 40 years, right? Or like grandparents, like, that's what they did. That's just like, they stay in a job for 30, 40 years, they have full job security, and, you know, they retire with a gold watch at the end of their career. Like, we don't have that. So there's no job security. Like, there's nothing like that. So if you sort of go into a job or a career that you're not super enthused about, well, there's going to be people that are very enthused about it. So you will be at the bottom of the hierarchy. And if you're at the bottom of the chain and there's no job security, well, then you're most likely to actually not be that successful. So you may as well choose something that you're enthused about. I'm not saying, you know, follow your passion, or I'm not saying that. Like, that's maybe, like, but I'm not going to advocate for that, but choose something you're enthused about, and stay ahead of the curve with it, right? You know, because you like it, because you see value in it, you're more likely to want to invest in it, you're more likely to want to continue your education. And so when you're at the top of the chain, you know, you're less stressed because you're not worried you're going to get fired or all that sort of thing. So that's one, you know, so in answering your question, you know, is it gratitude for what you have versus going and pursuing more, I would say it's the going and pursuing more, because you know, because you are so grateful for your life that you have the opportunity to do that. So go and pursue more, and then be grateful for the changes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, because, you know, when it comes to happiness, I mean, one of the things that can make people unhappy is constantly pursuing more. Right? This pursuit of more. But you're talking about it in a different way. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under 50 bucks. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show.
Okay, I'm gonna challenge you on that. So, and I've thought about this. I actually thought about this exact topic last night. So the pursuing more, you've got two distinct things, right? You've got, when it comes to your purpose, right? So that is like, you know, your career, any relationships or your health, like you should pursue more, right? You should have high standards for that, right? For example, if you don't like your job, you should pursue something different. You should raise your standards and do something different, right? If you're in a relationship and the girl you're with is treating you badly, you should pursue something different. You should pursue more, right? You should challenge her. You say, I don't want to be in this relationship. If you're unhealthy, right, you should pursue more. You should change. You should get up off the couch and go for a run, whatever it is. Right. So from a purpose perspective, right? So these things are purpose related. You should be seeing more. You should be raising your standards. But it's the other thing, I think, when it comes to hedonism or pleasure, that's when I think that you should not pursue more. For example, anyone who's like, oh, like, yeah, I just want to fly business class, right? Like, I want more. I really, that's my goal. Once they do that, right, it's very hard to come back. Right, you can't go back from that. People that fly business class, I've never flown business class, and I won't do it. But once you start flying business class, for example, you're in that, you're pursuing more, and you're temporarily happy. But then that's your new standard. So then you can't actually go back to economy. Just the thought of it is just so terrible. So the pursuing more thing is for purpose is absolutely a goal of life, I believe. But when it comes to hedonism or consumerism, you know, buying things, luxury, that sort of thing, I think that it should be less. You know, you should be comfortable with less. And I'm happy to provide examples of that. You know, using, like, I've been thinking about this exact topic. I mean, this is an important question, right? About the pursuing more versus contentment, right? But there's this concept, you know, of in economics known as diminishing marginal utility. And I talk about this concept all the time. And that is, the more we consume or the more we purchase of a particular good, the less satisfaction we gain, right? So that's to your point about pursuing more. So that is, for example, you may be walking down the street and you see this shirt or something like that in a store. It's like, wow, it's a really nice shirt. You know, yeah, okay, cool. I'm going to buy it. You wear the shirt, people compliment you and you feel, oh, cool. I feel so great in this shirt and whatever else, right? But then the second time you wear it, it's just a normal shirt. It just goes and exists in your closet, right? So, and then what? So we're like, oh, that little buzz that I felt that I experienced from wearing this and buying this, because, you know, buying things makes us feel good. The buzz is gone. So then what do people do? Well, they go and buy more, right? And then the more we buy, the less satisfaction we gain from each subsequent purchase. So this is a term that, you know, I learned in studying economics, and I didn't know that economists would teach me this and give away their secrets, but truly the more we purchase a particular product, the less satisfaction we gain from it. So yeah, diminishing marginal utility. You should Google that one. That's an important one.
Yeah. You know, what you're referring to, I mean, I think you used the word purpose, and that's a good one. I mean, this idea of, okay, yeah, maybe I should pursue more in the cases of where, if I'm asking myself the question, you know, is this healthy for me, this relationship or whatever it is that you're talking about, right? And it's like, it comes back to sort of like worthiness maybe or self-worth, right? It's like, well, okay, identifying the places where maybe you deserve more in some ways, but like it is a tricky balance. One thing that always comes back to for me is this idea of just awareness, like from a meta viewpoint. If you can develop an awareness around the thoughts and feelings around these debates, then you can better understand for yourself where you might fall into the trap of like pursuing more being a bad thing and pursuing more being a good thing. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh man. As I said, it's a tough question. But there is a quote in a book that I really love and that I brought along with me in the trip. And I quote in my book multiple times. The book is called Man's Search for Meaning. So hey, this is kind of what we're discussing, right? By Viktor Frankl. Yeah. Right. And he says, "What man needs is not a tensionless state, but rather a goal worthy of him striving for," right? So that is, you need something, you need a purpose, you need a reason to get out of bed in the morning, right? You need something. Otherwise, you know, I don't know, I guess you don't see your life as being very valuable. You know, you're talking self-worth, for example. But, you know, so for example, right? And we're, you know, so, I mean, there's a man I met in Afghanistan, right? And he has a incredibly difficult life. You know, his dad had actually murdered his mother for suspected adultery, and then his father had actually been killed attempting to cross the river into Tajikistan to bring back food, right? And so, you know, because Afghanistan, there's a war and whatever else, and you know, really, really tragic and terrible, well, very difficult existence, right? You know, the man himself, you know, he has no money and he lives with his aunt, he's not married, and you know, he's in Afghanistan, which is like a pretty tough environment right now. And you know, so on the topic of happiness, I'm kind of like, you know, what makes you happy? Like what do you do for work, you know? And I'm thinking like, oh, should I even ask that, or is that kind of rude to even ask? And he's like, oh, you know, I've actually built 7 schools you know, in the local area, and I teach children, you know, I've managed to get them all textbooks. I teach them English and mathematics, and my goal is that, you know, if we can educate these children, they're less likely to go down, like, you know, the radical path of the Taliban, for example, right? And if we can teach them to be tolerant and loving towards other people, right, then you know, the war can end sooner. Right. So you think about that. So you think about this idea of wanting more and purpose. And for him, it's like, man, like, you know, why should I get out of bed in the morning? It's like, cause I'm trying to create this, right? Like, that's a question we all ask. Like, why should I get out of bed in the morning? Right. And if you think your job sucks or whatever else, then you're probably just going to stay in bed. And if you stay in bed, you get depressed. Right. So if you have a purpose, or if you have some sort of goal, you know, as Viktor Frankl says, a goal worthy of striving for, if you have that, then you're more likely to actually, you know, go and you know, get out of bed and experience life, you know, in its fullest capacity. And as a result of that, you actually become someone completely different, you know. So for example, this guy in Afghanistan, you know, his whole family is dead, right? For you know, so what's his choice? His choice is to stay in bed and be depressed, or is a choice to actually go and build 7 schools, right? Like that's amazing. Like, truly, that is amazing. So, you know, and what motivates him? Well, it's a purpose. It's more. It's wanting more. It's wanting more out of life. It's wanting to make a difference.
Mm. I mean, that sounds, for you, is that sort of the genesis of this book as well? I mean, like we said, you could have just taken off to travel and whatever, indulged in the world travel lifestyle. But I mean, you chose to do this project and engage in these conversations. And I mean, part of that, I would imagine, well, it's for you, but it's also for you're putting something out into the world that other people can benefit from, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like the you know, the discussion of happiness is an interesting one because, I mean, there's so many theories on it, right? You know, people have been discussing it for thousands of years. You know, what makes a good life? Like, what is happiness? Is happiness living in the present? Is happiness planning for the future and trying to have a better future? Is happiness pleasure seeking? Is happiness, like, what is it? And there's so many books on it and so many people that have discussed it. So it's just, you know, I figured if I'm going to go, I'm going to read all these books, ancient books. You know, I took, you know, books on Hinduism and Stoicism, and then more recently, you know, Walden by Thoreau, and you know, Man's Search for Meaning, you know, more modern classics, and that all discuss happiness in one way or another. So, you know, who's the book for? I mean, well, it's for me, I guess. It's for me because I'm trying to articulate these thoughts and trying to articulate what is happiness. But then it's also for anyone who's interested in travel and who's also interested in the concept of happiness, you know. And you know, there are a lot of books on happiness these days. And you know, I'm not like a psychologist or anything like that. And I'm also, it's not a self-help, you know, feel good all the time book. It's nothing, you know, I sort of cringe at those sorts of books. It is what it does, well, at least what I try to make it do, is intertwine those sort of ancient and modern theories, not this sort of like feel good all day and be happy, just be happy, or whatever some of these, you know, self-helpy sorts of books tend to go into.
I wonder how this project or maybe the book even would have looked different or felt different or read differently in a different region of the world, right? Your experience with these specific countries, what did you find in terms of the answer to your overall question? Yeah, I guess I want to hear a little bit more about specifically the Silk Road and how maybe that was unique to everything that you experienced in terms of these conversations.
Yep. That raises the question, like, why did I choose to go to the Stan countries, right? And the answer
is, you went on Instagram.
Like, yeah. Well, I go on Instagram all the time, right? So, but you know, and what was it about the Stan countries, right? Like, well, and the answer is, I mean, I wanted to go somewhere completely off the grid and where, you know, where no one really goes. And, you know, I mean, the question is, like, why does no one go to these countries? And I don't know, but I think maybe, like, you know, since like 9/11, like 20 years ago, you know, it sent the world to Afghanistan, right? We think about Afghanistan for the first time. So any country ending in Stan, people just are like weary about, right? That's my suspicion. So people just like, there's like, oh, I would never go to Kyrgyzstan because it's probably dangerous, right? And you know, then you think of the movie Borat, for example, that's set in Kazakhstan. And how did they make that movie? It's like, well, no one knows anything about Kazakhstan, so you can portray it as you wish. So that's why I actually wanted to visit these countries. And you know, to answer your question, you know, the places that you go that have the least amount of Westerners and travelers are going to be the ones that have the, you know, that provide you the most unique experience, right? If I was to go to Thailand or something, it's just like, well, we know that there's just so many Australians and so many travelers, and locals don't really care about you, right? Because you're just one of the rest of them. But if you're the only one, then people are going to want to talk to you. They're going to be curious and whatever else. So
it's definitely easier, right?
Yeah, it's easier. That's right. Yeah. You go to a place where there's no travelers and people will speak to you, right? Like, because they're like, oh, that's, hi, what are you doing here? Sort of thing, you know, assuming that they can, you can communicate. So, you know, if I'd gone to Thailand and tried to write this, I mean, how would the experience have been? I don't know, probably not that profound. But with this, you know, I mean, this is, you know, I experienced, you know, hospitality and curiosity like I've never in my life. You know, I write in the book that, you know, these strangers, they open their lives and their homes to me, right? Like, I would hitchhike with them and eat meals with them and sleep on their floors even. And you know, this guy Massad, who I talked about before, you know, he started crying whilst opening up to me and telling me about his life. So, you know, how would the experience be different? I don't know. But yeah. So anyway, there's also, I mean, there's sort of five themes of the book, which I can go through if you'd like. I mean, or we can, I mean, however you want to continue this conversation, but what I believe that, yeah, there are five things that constitute a good life respect to happiness?
Let's hear them. How are we going to not hear them now?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah, you better ask me them.
I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah, exactly. May as well end the conversation now. The first is minimalism, right? And I talked about that. This concept, diminishing marginal utility, right? The more we consume of a particular product, the less satisfaction we gain. So if you know, we have this idea like retail therapy. It's like, okay, like that's a temporary pleasure seeking thing, but it's not, that doesn't constitute happiness, right? And then there's also this other concept known as hedonistic adaptation. And I really, and this is a, not an economic concept, but rather a social science or psychological concept. And that is, as soon as you go up the lifestyle chain, right? As soon as you, for example, you go and have a $200 dinner, let's say, or $100 dinner, it's like, wow, that was amazing. That was so great, right? But then you go do it again the next night. And the next night, it wasn't as good. Why? Because you kind of expected, you knew what was going to happen. So that initial spike in happiness you had, you don't get the second time or the third time or the fourth time, right? So what I believe, therefore, is that, you know, instead of falling victim to, you know, these like, oh, let's just go retail therapy, buy as much as we can, or let's go and do all these like fancy things all the time. You know, these things are good every so often, like definitely, but as a lifestyle, it would be far wiser to live more simply and to save as much money as you can so you can actually go and travel. Because, you know, if you have a well-paid job, it's like, well, is it worth that you work your ass off so you can just buy expensive clothes and only go out for expensive dinners every night? Is that worth it? Is your time worth that? Or is it that, you know, you've been planning on going traveling for 6 months and you keep talking about it, but you can't actually do it because you're prioritizing, you're prioritizing sort of, present moment hedonism over long-term, you know, growth and goal setting, right? So that's, you know, there's this guy, Ray Dalio, who's like this, like he owns a hedge fund. I don't even know what a hedge fund is. It's like some finance thing, but he's like super wealthy and super successful. I don't know what a hedge fund is, right? But he wrote this book and called Principles, and he says that, you know, we have first order goals and we have second order goals. First order goals, like, you know, is like the purpose stuff, right? Like the, you know, I want to buy a house, I want to quit my job and go traveling, whatever. But the second order goals is like the, you know, the more immediate, instant gratification, consumerist sort of like, yeah, I want to buy that car, or I want to go retail therapy and buy like all sorts of clothes. And so then what he says is that you must keep your first order goals at the top of your mind, right? That is, this is my goal. This is what I'm doing. And so then with that in mind, you got to push away the second order goals, right? Because the second order goals will distract you from your first order goals. And you unfortunately won't achieve your first order goals if you're getting distracted. So, you know, minimal, you can call it minimalism. You can call it simple living. I know you talk about budget travel a lot on this podcast. You can call it essentialism. That's another, I think there's a book called Essentialism. You know, it's don't just live, like super lean, but just only buy the essentials, right? Doesn't mean necessarily minimalism, but essentialism. So that's the first thing, right? Because, you know, your time is your most important resource, and 3 months or a 6 month trip is far more valuable than, you know, going and buying clothes all the time or buying a $50,000 car or whatever it is on and people, the things that people do, right? So yeah, minimalism is the first theme. What do you think? Does that raise any questions?
I agree that it's nice to stay lean. I think there is a balance between, you know, you mentioned like the business class example or the, you know, eating the fancy meal and not appreciating it the next time. I do think you can maintain those appreciations if you don't have a certain level of expectation and you're very much practicing gratitude, then I think that it's definitely possible. Maybe gratitude's on your list. I don't know. But
It is, in fact.
Okay.
It wouldn't be a book about happiness without that in there.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't feel like it's always black and white, you know? You're not a terrible person if you own things, and it doesn't mean you're going to be totally unhappy. I've lived sort of both lives now, right? Like nomadically, and then now I have a home and like kids, and with that comes more stuff, probably more stuff than I've ever had before. And like that feels heavy sometimes, but also I'm not attached to it in the same way because I had experiences with minimalism. So it's a bit nuanced, but I understand the spirit behind what you're saying. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I don't like, you know, as I said, I love going out for a nice dinner, you know, with my wife, we do that sometimes and it's great. Right. But it's when it becomes the everyday that, and that's when you stop appreciating it because it's the norm.
Was she with you on this trip?
No. So this is a whole different story about how I met her. And maybe if we have time, we can get to that. But
you didn't know her when you were doing this trip.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. The trip was a few years ago now. So it's taken me like 4 and a bit years to actually write the book.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, like, right. As I said, I'm not saying, you know, pinch every penny. I'm definitely not saying that, but it's just once the lifestyle creep become, you know, it creeps up on you and it becomes the norm of every day you're doing this, and that's when you stop appreciating it, right? So that's the first thing. The second is, so reading deep, well, as deep as I could, kind of hard to read these sorts of books, but this book called the Bhagavad Gita, which is the kind of what like the, you know, the Bible is to the Christians, like this is to the Hindus, right? Like this is their book, right? And then also reading Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, right? It's a book on Stoicism. The Bhagavad Gita was written like 2,500 years ago, and Meditations was written 2,000 years ago, and they both touch on this same idea, right? They call it different things, and I think if you can master this, then you will be happy, right? But it's not easy, right? And what, for example, Marcus Aurelius says in the book, he says that if you are troubled by something external, it is not the thing itself, but rather your estimate of it, and that you have the power to change at any moment. So that is, for example, tomorrow you've got all these plans. Like let's say it's like summer and you're going to go to the beach. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go to the beach. Can't wait. So excited, whatever. Right. And then, you know, you've got all these plans. You're going to go swimming and all the sort of stuff you do at the beach. But then it rains. Right. And so then you're like, oh, God damn, I had all these plans, right? But the point is that, so it's not actually the rain that's making you unhappy, but rather it's your own wanting the sun, right? The rain is just the rain. It just is. It's just whatever. Rain is just water and it happens all the time. But it's because we want the sun is why we're being unhappy. So it's if we just accept the rain, then we're not unhappy. We're happy. Right?
My version is like, I want my kids to go to bed at a certain time, you know, so I can have some time to just chill out and unwind. Anyway, little sidebar.
But so, yeah, like that's, you know, yeah. In the Hindus call it attachment, or, you know, practicing non-attachment, not being attached to outcomes. Right. And so that is in the present moment, if you're unhappy, it's not like because of the thing, but it's your estimate of it. It's because you're wanting it to be something else. You're attached to something else, right? So that's an important concept. You know, and the reason I learned that, I was driving along the Pamir Highway, which is, you know, the most amazing, it's called the roof of the world. I think there's actually in Nepal, they have a roof of the world as well, but whatever, this is also called the roof of the world. It's the second highest highway in the world. Right. And it starts in southern Kyrgyzstan and goes all throughout Tajikistan, the Pamir Mountains.
Beautiful,
and
huh?
The border of Afghanistan. Oh, amazing. You know, the most stunning scenery I've seen, right? Just mountains and hot springs and, you know, and it's also known as the heroin highway, right? Because all the heroin that's produced in Afghanistan actually travels along this highway. And then through Kyrgyzstan and then up into Europe and to North America, right? So it's known to be dangerous, right? Because, well, for obvious reasons. I was driving along this road and the car, you know, we're driving it at nighttime, which you shouldn't do along the Pamir Highway because there's no lights and whatever else. And the car happened to, you know, come to a complete stop. You see this boom noise, right? And the driver was, you know, like trying to drive, but nothing. And I'm like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? And, you know, the driver and my guide were talking in Farsi and I couldn't understand what they were saying. And I'm like, you know, what's happening? What's happening? And, you know, it's the Pamir Highway in the mountains at 6,000 meters altitude, right? It's nighttime, it's dark, it's cold. I didn't have any, you know, any warm clothing because it was summer. I didn't think it would get that cold. And he looks around at me, he turns around at me, he goes, "We're f-." And I'm just like, "Oh God, like what's going on, right? We're stuck here, like, you know, in the middle of the mountains, nowhere. I don't have a sleeping bag or a tent or anything. It's too cold. It's getting below zero." And you know, we had to get out of the car and walk, and it's like pouring with rain, right? And you know when you're like, you're walking and there's so much mud that, you know, your foot gets stuck in the mud and then your shoe comes off because it's stuck in the mud and all that. And it was just like, you know, we're walking for like an hour, you know, it's like not great, right? And it's just like, I don't even know where we're going because we're in the mountains. There's no one even here, right? And we eventually keep walking until we notice this like mud house, and you know, the guy that who was my guide, he just goes and knocks, and they let us sleep in their mud house, and I slept with a baby lamb, you know, at my feet, and you know, it was pretty cool, right? Wake up the next day and the sun's shining, and this woman had made us tea, and she set us on our way, right, to go and get help to fix the car. But so the point is that in a moment like this, you know, your tendency is to stress, you know, to worry, to catastrophize, right? But if you simply accept it as, yeah, I mean, this is just a walk, this is an adventure, I'm in the mountains, this is amazing, right? If you accept these things, then you'll actually experience happiness, right? Or at least not unhappiness. And I'm not saying that's easy. Like, this is not easy, but from this perspective, happiness is a factor of, you know, can you control your own mind? Can you control what it is that you want in the moment? If you're accepting of everything around you, you'll be happy. If you want something else, if you're like, "Oh, this sucks, you know, this is cold," or like, "Oh, my feet are muddy," whatever, then you'll be unhappy, right? So that's the choice. And that's what Marcus Aurelius wrote, you know, it's not the thing, it's your estimate of it, and that you have the power to change at any moment. So it's a good lesson, I think. So that's lesson two, or theme two.
Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, "Oh, I've got this." Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, "Oh, I've been doing this wrong." So I'm already leveling up and learning. And you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening.
And so we got minimalism.
This
idea of not being able, attachment or detachment, maybe the idea of not controlling, not being attached to the external circumstances.
Yep, exactly.
What's the third?
So the third, I arrived in this town, Korog, which is, and anyone who travels in, you know, the Silk Road, so the Pimir Highway is a very famous Silk Road route, and then the town of Korog, which is in Tajikistan, but it borders Afghanistan, right? So this is the town, if you want to go to Afghanistan, like this is the town you should go through, just because it's like the region, once you cross the border into Afghanistan, for example, the region is like, it's controlled by the allied, you know, the Afghan government forces and not the Taliban. So it's like somewhat safe. And I'm, you know, I'm doing the inverted commas with my fingers here. It's somewhat safe. So, you know, I was in this town, beautiful town, like truly, like it's quite, it's very scenic and it's mountainous and there's like rivers and you can go swimming in summer and there's, you know, good bazaars with all sorts of, good food and, you know, nice restaurants. And it's a really cool place. And I met a man, who actually owned the guest house and, you know, one of the few people that speaks English. And so I was talking, just chatting, you know, so naturally the topic of happiness comes up, and I say, you know, so like, what do you do to be happy? And he says, meditate, right? So and it was funny because, you know, some of the books I've been reading, you know, Walden, Bhagavad Gita, and of course Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. I don't think he actually talks too much about, well, I guess he does implicitly, but they talk about meditation, right? They talk, a lot of books talk about meditation, right? But what is that, right? Like what, because, you know, you always hear about this sort of thing, meditation, but there's a reason why people have been practicing this for thousands of years, right? And so the reason is, I mean, what I write in my book is that, let's say, for example, like, you know, you and I, what do we do all day? We sit down at our desks and work, right? So we exercise to, we move our body, right? You move your body so to exercise it, right? So it makes it stronger, right? That's pretty obvious. But then with your mind, it's the opposite. Our minds are always moving. They're always thinking, they're worrying. They're thinking, you know, like, oh, you know, what time do gerbils go to sleep? Or, you know, like, what did my manager really mean when they said this? Or like, you know, what am I going to be doing in 6 months? All this sort of stuff that goes on in our mind, right? So it's always moving. So to the contrary to exercise, what we do is we still our minds, right? So by stilling your mind, you're actually keeping it fit and strong. So does that make sense? It's kind of like the opposite. With your body, you know, your body is doing nothing all day. So you move it, it makes it strong. And your mind is the opposite. Your mind is always moving. It's always thinking and speculating and worrying and all the stuff that your mind does. So you still it, which is to meditate, right? And so then whenever you start to worry, whatever, you can actually catch it and you can actually notice it.
Easier said than done, right?
yeah, that is for sure. So you know, the when I used this along the trip, you know, I go into Afghanistan, and this man who owned the guest house, he actually took me there because, you know, he wanted to go there anyway. So I was like, amazing, I don't want to go by myself, or, you know, without a guide, someone who knows the area. And, you know, you cross the border and into Afghanistan, and this is like, it's getting kind of serious. I didn't tell my mom, or I didn't tell anyone that I was going into Afghanistan, just because it's like, well, my mom would be like, you're not going. And I'm like, I'm going. So I was just like, I'm not telling anyone. Like, and so naturally, you know, you walk across the border, and the border commissioner starts talking to us, and he's got a picture with the map, and he's pointing at the map. He's like, okay, as long as you stay within this area, you'll be fine. He goes, the closest Taliban controlled region is about 30 kilometers from here. So I'm like, oh, okay, 30 kilometers. Like, okay. And I'm like, you sure it's controlled by, like, far? You know, yeah, right. I'm like, you sure it's controlled? He's like, yeah, it's controlled by Afghan government, you know. But naturally, of course, the tendency is to panic, right? And I talked about this in a different chapter and just before. But so as we're going, and we're in the back of a truck going into the town, you know, I'm worrying and seizing up. But as Saeed, the man, had instructed about meditation in the books, you know, in Walden and Bhagavad Gita are talking about meditation, I just sat there, you know, counted my breath, and, you know, the panic dissipated and my body relaxed, right? And so as a result, I could be more present and actually enjoying, enjoying the scenery, right? And just sort of, you know, I guess, content with what that was. And, you know, it's obviously not always as simple as that, right? Like, but it does work. And the reason it works is that, you know, well, you know, people have been practicing it for thousands of years. You know, I'm sure a psychologist, if you spoke to one, would recommend it. Like, it's known, it works. Like, it actually does work. So that is an effective tool. It's an effective tool.
Cool. Give us your four and five. I like they have stories with each of these. That's cool.
Yep. So fourth is the purpose stuff, which I talked about. You need a job or something that makes you want to get out of bed in the morning. And if you don't, then you just sort of get depressed, right? And, you know, you have people that hate their jobs and whatever else, and we know that this is common. And then they get depressed. So you need a purpose, you know, because you spend so much time at work, right? And in you know, we talk about wanting more versus being content, and I'm all about, you know, going, striving for more with your purpose. And the reason is that you become more, right? You're actually extending yourself and you know, resolving more difficult problems. And as a result, you become smarter, you become more useful in the world, right? So the purpose stuff is an important one. You know, I write in the book that a lot of people, you know, they fear the change. You know, they don't like their job, but they've told me since I've done this trip, you know, I'd really love to go do something like that. I'd really love to go traveling. I'd really love to, you know, go and live in Tahiti and teach scuba diving, or I'd really love to go and move to the countryside and fix antique cars, you know, all this sort of stuff people tell me, right? And but you know, they fear change, right? And again, there is this quote in the book, Marcus Aurelius, he says, you know, it is not death that man should fear, but rather he should fear never beginning to live. And I think that is like, hey, we're alive. You should pick a career or a job or a purpose that you think is valuable, because, you know, don't fear change like you fear death. Just actually fear not living at all. Like it's like, and maybe that sounds cliche. I don't know. Maybe it does, but it is an important, very important thing. So pick a purpose or a career or something that you see as valuable. Then, you know, I do talk, there's a section like after leaving Afghanistan and going back into Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, the only emotion to feel after that experience and all the, you know, incredibly brave and tough people that I met in Afghanistan is, you know, you only feel grateful for your life. Like that is, and so the gratitude thing is like, is incredibly important, right? If you go to Afghanistan, you understand the problems that people have, and then you think about the problems that you have, it's like, okay, like I'm not going to complain anymore. Like my life
is
so...
your fifth point, gratitude?
Yeah. Gratitude, yeah. And that I hope that doesn't sound cliche, because I think that every book on happiness talks about gratitude, but there's a reason.
Well,
for
you have to. I mean, it's...
You have to be. That's right.
That's yeah,
exactly right.
That's
you have to be.
Non-negotiable, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. It's like, hey, my life sucks. And then, you know, oh, my life sucks. I'm unhappy. Then it's like, actually, no, I've got all these reasons to be grateful for. So
right back,
you know, that's
on track.
Exactly. So that, like, you know, like, for example, like, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you're in the top percentage of most wealthy and fortunate people ever to grace this planet, right? Like ever in the history of the world. Like, wow, that's amazing, right? Like truly that's amazing. So you think about that. Like if you listen to this podcast, you are the top percent of wealthy and fortunate people who have such amazing lives ever to exist on this planet. So that's something to be grateful for. You know, you think of, like, I mean, you know, obviously don't talk about this in the book, but you think of with COVID right now, it's like, okay, like, how are you spending your days? How are you spending your time, right? Are you grateful for your life? Are you grateful for this opportunity to have downtime? And you know, because a lot of people, for example, like I found myself a year ago, you know, pre-COVID, like I was like, oh, I can't catch a break. You know, I'm so busy, all these social engagements, all this travel or whatever, all this stuff, I'm spending all my money, everything like that. I can't catch a break. And now, you've got that with COVID, you know, you and this is going to be the only time in your life that you have this. So are you grateful for it, or are you just complaining? So if you're grateful for it, then you're more likely to, you know, hey, write a book. You're more likely to do some course online that you can do for free. You're more likely to read more books, right? Or are you going to be pissed off and just, you know, watch Netflix all day? So if you're grateful, then you're actually going to make the most of this time, right? Because COVID, and I don't talk about COVID in my book, but this is a, you know, hey, it's take your pick, right? Take your pick. Be grateful and use the time to unwind and learn a skill or something, or you know, don't.
Well, so, I think for most of us, I think it's both. I mean, I've certainly had that experience with these lockdowns, but it's the gratitude that kind of has been able to pull me out when I'm having the other version of that, right? And it's just like, oh, man, this is getting old, this routine and all this stuff is like, well, wait, hold on a second. Like, all right. Well, it's also, you know, this idea of giving yourself some space to be like, it's okay to be a little sad and depressed and unsure too, I think. But a gratitude is certainly a tool to, you know, because there can be shame around that, like kind of shaming yourself or feeling bad or feeling guilty because you're feeling a little down. Like I generally am a positive person. So if I'm feeling down, I'm like, what's wrong with me, man? Like I got to pull myself out, but it's like, right, I think it's okay to feel that too. But you're understanding that this maybe comes back to point number two, the idea of attachment. But if you're not attached to the emotion, if you're just sitting with the emotion, but you know, well, this is going to pass through you like a wave, and you can get the gratitude can help you kind of, it's like a life jacket in a way, right? Can kind of bring it back to the top.
To your point, like you're exactly right. Like, you know, we all get down and think, oh, is this ever going to end? That sort of thing. And I do that as well. You know, you can ask my wife that. But it is the gratitude thing. There's, you know, just the simple writing down, like, what am I grateful for, that can snap you out of it. So that's definitely something that I'm, you know, this is not going to be around forever. You know, take your pick, like, learn a skill, do something like that. Anyway.
Well, man, I'd say solid job distilling thousands of years of wisdom into these 5 points. I mean, I look at these, I just, you know, of course, these are any list like this is debatable, but this is pretty, a lot of these are, you can see why it can be related to happiness or contentment. And I mean, obviously, these are the lessons you pulled from your trip. You know, putting this through the lens of travel, one thing I was thinking about that struck me, I'm looking at minimalism, attachment or non-attachment, meditation, purpose, gratitude. These are things that either travel, at least for me, really reinforce. Like the travel experience can really reinforce these things or help you discover them, right? Like I didn't really know about minimalism or like that was even a thing until I started traveling. And then when I went somewhere with just a backpack and it was this feeling of like, of course, when I started traveling, there weren't all these blogs and stuff. So I'm dating myself, but it was just like this feeling of, oh, this feels good. Like to not have a lot of stuff to take care of. And it's just like, you had to have that experience, I guess. You have to feel it for yourself to understand what it means to you. And I feel like how it can change you. And like, you know, even though, like I said, I mean, I own more stuff now, but I know what that's like. I know that feeling, and it's made me less attached to things for my life because I traveled in that way for so long early. It just gave me a healthier relationship with things moving forward. So I just love that, you know, these lessons you've carved out, I mean, they're learnable anywhere. You don't need to travel. But for me personally, it was travel that reinforced a lot of these and helped me discover them.
Yep. Absolutely, man. And you know, this is a travel podcast. And, you know, so like travel, we can all agree is so great for you to actually think about these concepts and question stuff and you know, think about what makes you happy. And it does reinforce all these things. So we're on the same page there. So absolutely agree.
Why should people travel to this region of the world?
I mean, well, okay, because one is that it's still in that sort of phase. I mean, this was a few years ago now when I was there, right? It's taken me, as I said, 4 years to write the book, but I assume it's still the same. It's still very much in the phase of it's not overrun by travelers and tourists and stuff like that. So people are actually willing to talk to you and are curious about you. You know, once it gets flooded by travelers and tourists, like the locals sort of shy away a bit, I think, you know, that's as far as I know what the evolution is. But the people were so kind and so curious and so interesting. And you know, the places, the mountains and the nature and you know, you can hitchhike so easily and it's so safe. I mean, the thing is, with the exception of Afghanistan, these countries are very safe. The reason is that they used to be part of the Soviet Union, and in the Soviet Union, there's like no crime, right? Because it's like a police state. So there's no crime. You don't have to worry about that. There's no crime at all. Very safe, very hospitable. People are kind and just stunning, you know, stunning lakes and mountains and nature. And, you know, the villages are cool and very photogenic. I, you know, the stands, I really loved Kyrgyzstan. Yeah. As
I've heard
as
so many good things really stunning, about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah, that you can travel without, I don't, like, you know, if you have a Western passport, it's like, it's pretty, the visa situation isn't like tough. I think Tajikistan was tough, but like, not really. Actually, it wasn't tough. It took me like a couple of hours, but I had to get a visa. But it's, yeah, go and travel these countries. They're amazing.
Hmm.
So yeah.
It sounds like your life went from sort of the traditional status quo type of 9-to-5 existence to something completely different. So yeah, I mean, you've alluded to it a bit, but coming out of the trip in the last years, like where did this whole project and just this experience take you in your life?
Yep. Yeah. So it was funny, you know, and I, as I said earlier on in the conversation, we had I talked about the conversation that I had with this woman in Kyrgyzstan who says, you know, the most important thing is to pick a career that you like. Right. And, so I got back to Australia and I was sort of, you know, I decided to go back and finish my master's degree. I was like, look, I've almost done with it. Just finish it off. Like, there's no point in you know, just not finishing it. Just get it done. Although you never use it, who cares? Just get it done. So I did that for a bit. And I also just did some freelance accounting and stuff like that, you know. But I realized, I'm like, you know, I'm sort of just doing the same sort of work, but just on a lesser basis, you know, and sort of spending more time at the beach. And there is a quote in Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. He says, you know, when man does not have a deep sense of purpose, he distracts himself with pleasure. And that's what I was doing. I was just spending more time at the beach. And I'm like, I'm not really being true to my own potential. I'm not really, I'm just sort of existing. I'm just, you know, doing freelance services, which I don't really like, and going to the beach. The beach is always fun, but it's not, you know, age 28, like, you know, I think I could do better. So, you know, I'm sort of walking down the beach again, sort of back where I was only months earlier, just thinking like, what am I doing? Like, surely there's more, you know, I can do better. So what I did was I thought to myself, like, I want to work for a tech company, like a startup or something like that. I think a startup will be cool, you know, cause the startups have the quirkiest thinkers, and it's exciting and it's not mundane. And so I thought, you know, I want to work for a startup. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to just move to the head or the center of the startup world, which is San Francisco, Silicon Valley. And I called up my dad. I'm like, hey dad, I'm moving home for 6 weeks because I need to save money. And he's like, all right, go for it. So I moved home and, you know, kept working, saving everything I could, and then moved to San Francisco, booked a flight. I actually, you know, flew there, arrived, and had enough savings to get me through, hopefully, you know, however long it would take, 12 weeks or something. And applied for like 70 different startups, and one actually gave me a job and sponsored my work visa. And so it was, you know, I got a job in a cool Silicon Valley startup in downtown San Francisco in a warehouse. And I mean this, that the day I started the job was the day I ran out of money. Like, and I mean that sincerely. So it was just meant to be, right? And then, you know, fast, and that was in 2017, right? So things have changed. As I said, the book's taken me a while to write, but so since, you know, the company, it didn't take off, you know, it's a startup, right? It kind of went up and down and whatever else. And I managed to get a different job, with a San Francisco tech company, and moved up to Vancouver because, which is, you know, west coast of Canada, because during that time, I, you know, whilst living in San Francisco, I had made my first trip up to Canada, never been. And, I was sitting there reading, and a beautiful girl came up and started talking to me. She's like, oh, what are you reading? Blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, we stayed in touch, and next thing we're visiting each other. And then I'm like, hey, I can actually move up. I can keep my San Francisco job, but I can just come live in Canada. Like, why not? Like, why would I not do that? I get all the opportunities from the land of opportunity, but I get to live in Canada. So that works great for me. And so I now live in Vancouver. We just got married recently.
Congratulations.
And thank you. Yeah. And I manage, you know, roughly 20 people in from a sales perspective. So completely different, you know, from a corporate analyst, you know, solving the most complex of problems, and now to be working for a cool tech company in sales is exactly like, I love it, you know, and each day is just fun. It's remote, you know, and, you know, with COVID, it's kind of limiting, but hey, you know, pre-COVID, we were traveling all the time and working remote, and we're going to be doing all that. So I think if you can have a good purpose and also travel while doing that, have a good career and travel, then like, that's great. So yeah, it's all worked out well. I'm happy, and hey, you know, you know, I'll finish off this by, you know, if this is the end of the interview, I don't know, but there's a quote in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, and this is a book that was written 2,500 years ago, and he says, well, the author says, far better to live your own life imperfectly than to live someone else's life perfectly, right? Did I say that right? Far better to live one's own life imperfectly than to live someone else's life perfectly. Right. And that's the way it's been. It's been kind of messy and it gets like that, but hey, I'm super happy with where it's led me and you know, feeling grateful and feeling like my purpose is good. And you know, you do have to make those changes, and live, you know, make the changes, take the risks, and you know, you'll be rewarded. So yeah, that's the end of the story.
Well, I think that's a great place to end, and congratulations. This book sounds like it was a pretty big project for you, not just the trip itself, but then unpacking what it all means, then putting it all together. And I know you mentioned earlier, you know, being a field photographer, but yet you know, you put out this photography book, and it obviously has got stories and everything like that with your photography in it. So anyway, congratulations on all that. Super cool. And yeah, it's always interesting to see how, yeah, where life takes people after an experience like this. Very much appreciate your time and sharing your experiences around this. And just to remind people, you want to let everybody know the title of the book and where they can get it and all that good stuff, or just let people know where they can find your work.
Yep. And thanks, Jason. I appreciate you having me on the show. It's been awesome. And the book is called The Silk Road to Happiness. It's on Amazon. It's an ebook. And I've actually all proceeds I'm donating to an organization called mentoring.org. So it's a mentor program that helps young people across the US find their purpose and reach their potential. So hey, if you don't like the book, at least it will go to a good cause, right? Add me on LinkedIn. My name's Will Rickard, or add me on Instagram. Read the book. I'd love your feedback. And I'm hiring as well when it comes to, so if anyone who listens to this podcast and works in sales, just ping me on LinkedIn
I guess they can look there and find the details.
Yeah, they can look there. Yeah.
There you go. Throwing it out there.
Just thought I'd throw that in there.
He's just like, wait a minute. I just went into sales mode for a second. All right, let me get out of there now. Well, we can let you get some coffee now, man. I don't know if you're going back to bed or you're too charged up.
But I'm so awake now.
All right, good. So yeah, no. Mission accomplished, man.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's been awesome.
Thank you so much. All right. Take care.
Thanks.
There you go. Thank you once again to Will for stopping by the show. Congrats on the book and congrats on taking the time for yourself just to explore such an important topic for your life. You know, it's, I don't know. Sometimes life can just kind of sneak away from you, right? If we don't make time and space for these bigger picture important things, these questions, these big questions. I mean, it's no secret if you listen to the show. You know, it's one of the big, I'd say super sneaky things about travel is when you decide to do it and make some big life changes to do it, you're forced to face all these important questions and bigger questions, really. And what it comes down to, I mean, in some ways, yes, it comes down to happiness, right? Or contentedness or creating a more fulfilling life for yourself, whether that's the lifestyle or a career change, it all ties in, right? And it's important to make space for ourselves to figure out what some of these things mean and answer some of these bigger questions. It's not like we have to put ourselves into an existential crisis every time we're unhappy or not feeling good about things. But, you know, if days, I should say weeks go by, maybe, you know, a few days here or there, but then it's weeks and months and you're just not feeling good, it's time to start asking yourself some questions, right? And we all have to do that. And it's important to not just ask the questions, but give ourselves the space to answer them. And I think that's one of the many magical things that travel can do. It kind of forces that space for a lot of us, right? And it's cliche to say, oh, well, you can go out and you find yourself when you're traveling. And I think that happens a lot in some ways, but it's also, it might be just because we're giving ourselves the mental space and the physical space, I guess, to get in touch with ourselves in that way. We can do that from anywhere, but travel kind of accelerates that or creates an environment for that, if you will. And then you have all the external stimulus and the things that, you know, you're soaking in from the world that make you, you know, give you new perspectives and sometimes make you question everything. And It's just fascinating. Fascinating topic, happiness. So thank you for taking the time to explore that with Will and I today. I hope you enjoyed listening in on our conversation. I mentioned at the top of the show this whole idea of an anti-bucket list, right? And maybe after listening to the interview, you know what I'm talking about, because Will didn't know jack squat about the stands, any of these countries he was going to. In fact, that was one of the reasons why it seems like he picked those, because he didn't know anything about them. And he's like, you know what? I just heard about these places and I'm just going to go check it out. I'm not reading any guidebooks or anything. And I call this the anti-bucket list approach, because I'd say more often than not, it's kind of about where you want to go, right? That's what we're looking at. That's what we're targeting when we're figuring out a trip, well, we're going to spend money on a plane ticket. We're going to, you know, want to see the things that we want to see, the things that are on our bucket list, the things that we've been dreaming about seeing. I want to hike to Machu Picchu. I want to look at the Sistine Chapel. You know, these were some of my things that I've been fortunate enough to do. And they were things that were not necessarily on a list, but they were in my head, right? They were things that I wanted to see in the world and experience. But there's something awesome also about doing the anti-bucket list thing, right? Going to a place just because it's random. It's there. You don't know anything about it. That you have no agenda. You have no expectations. You literally are just going in with a blank slate. That is pretty magical. I could be setting yourself up for some travel magic there. It might not be everybody's cup of tea. Maybe they just can't get their head around the idea of parting with money for a plane ticket or whatever and not going to XYZ place they've been thinking about forever. I get that. But I think this is something we should all at least try once in our lives, right? I've done it naturally on the road through my own travels and working these travel jobs and stuff, kind of ending up in these places that I didn't really expect to. But to go out of your way on a plane and just land in a place just because is a really cool thing, I think, for life and for a travel experience. So I just wanted to highlight that, give Will some props for just taking off to a place he knew nothing or places he knew nothing about. And there's something about that lack of research that it's part of the travel experience that you have, right? In that case, it's going to tie in and it's going to be different. So if you're listening to this and this resonates or you end up doing this, I'd love to hear from you. You can always get in touch. You know where to find me, jason@zerototravel.com. I do want to give a shout out here to somebody who emailed me about a week ago. Daniel, what's up? He wrote me a short email. He said, beach shots and travel. He said, Jason, the best we can do till the pandemic subsides in terms of travel is bike to the beach in Boca Raton. Here are a few shots. I listened to your podcast on my way to and from the beach about 14 miles. Have a good day, Dan. You know, just laying it out there. And he sent me a couple pictures of the beach down in Florida. And, you know, I told him, I wrote back. I said, man, I can smell the ocean through these pictures. Thank you so much for sharing. I can feel the ocean breeze. I can smell the ocean. I can feel the warm air. And that was really sweet. It's always nice when people take the time to send me a message like this, send some pictures, let me know where you're listening. You can do that too. Hint, hint. You can do that as well. It's a treat. It's a treat, especially being in Norway here where it's cold a lot of days. So thank you, Dan, for letting me know. I'm keeping you company on the bike ride and sending me those shots of the beach. Really very much appreciated. And I encourage anybody to get in touch. Also, because this is a community-powered show, and I want your feedback if you have any guests or topics you want me to cover or have on. I should have said that the reverse way. Then you just drop me a line or leave me a voice message. Let me know, and I'll do my best to accommodate you. Okay, I am going to reach into my little quote drawer and leave you with some inspiration today. Random one pulled out from Ram Dass, who said, "We are all just walking each other home. We are all just walking each other home." Beautiful. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Smile. Take a chance today. Do an anti-bucket list trip, maybe. I don't know. And thanks for your time, and I'll see you next time. Peace and love.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.